many ways, the world is ending.
But in many ways, the fight is just
beginning. And for that reason, this Pride, we're partnering with overthrowing the government. Mistakes. Ow. Hi.
Hi.
We're
recording on the day, on an historic day.
Yeah, probably many times we've recorded on an historic day.
Yeah, remember when we recorded while the insurrection was happening?
The last time it was a large, like, big headlines, the world is shit kind of moment we were recording during, it was the insurrection.
And now Roe v. Wade has been overturned.
And now we're recording in the midst of the Roe v. Wade overturn decision.
Yep.
So, you know, as oral history podcasters, we're just doing our duty of capturing what life is like in the moment of these historical events.
Yeah.
Anything to...
I mean, I have I really have nothing to say other than, like, I think anytime shit, like, you know, anytime stuff like this happens, I think, you know, the response is for people who are upset to kind of want to go out there and do the work. And I guess I would just caution anyone listening who is feeling riled up and inspired to go, like, make a change. I tweeted this today. To go, like, see if people are already doing that work in your community rather than trying to, like, take on a leadership role. Or 'cause I think that... Honestly, I think that is what has caused so much kind of chaos since Trump was elected in 2016, was that, like, a lot of statewide and citywide movements were kind of, like, bombarded by first-time organizers. Like, I think, you know, we kind of saw it with reproductive rights with, like, older, cis, like, white suburban women who wanted to go out and organize for the first time and then kind of hijacked movements and didn't really know what they were doing, but felt like they did. So,
I mean, even the Women's March was, like, a hijacked moment.
Yeah. So, and, you know, I saw it in Rhode Island when we were trying to get abortion laws passed, which, like, we did. But, and, like, I kind of, like, did the same thing in my own smaller way. It's just, it happens. Like, people want to do something, but often you're, like, kind of stepping on other people's toes. So, what I would say is go check, see if there's, like, a local, like, DSA in your community. Or...
And start, honestly, with doing just low-level volunteer work.
Yeah.
Like, stuff that it might feel to you like, oh, like, but I want to be on the front lines and doing, like, the hard real work. And it's, like, the real work actually is in the minutia.
Yeah.
That, like, for lack of a better word, like, the bitch work.
Yeah, being on the front lines feels good, but it's not, you're not... helping anyone.
It ultimately is also, like, to serve your ego to serve the cause.
Yeah, that's why it feels good.
So, yeah, seek out things that are already happening and support that if you can.
Yeah.
I didn't mean for this to turn into a PSA thing. I actually don't like this. And we'll be getting into Roe v. Wade plenty later on.
All I really have to say is that I'm excited to get my uterus transplant and be the first trans woman to have an abortion. That is, like, that's how I'm feeling today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about that.
That's the real work.
I'm doing the work.
Yeah.
I'm doing that work.
That is the real front lines work that we need to see in our communities.
It's going to be my piece of performance art to support women. Yeah. I'm going to put myself out there.
Yeah.
I'm going to put myself in the line of fire to support women. And supporting women is why we have J.K. Rowling as a guest today on the pod. Are you there, Joanne? Trying to get her to connect.
Yeah, sorry. The Zoom is we're having technical difficulties.
The Zoom call is coming from inside the house.
But anytime now, Joanne will be. What it would be so funny if we, like, named this podcast the title, like, with J.K. Rowling.
Should. So that's the title.
as our guest with guest JK Rowling.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't want to like be PSA. That's just, that's the only thing that I
could. Oh, I wasn't criticizing.
No, I didn't feel it, but it's just, that's why I don't, I'm not to be like, I'm dumb, because I'm not, I'm actually highly intelligent and so are you. But yeah, it's like, I don't, if you want to like, you know, go listen to another podcast. I don't, I'm just, I'm so exhausted and so are you, dear listener. I'm sure, you know, y'all come here to like, listen to us talk about like history and doing drugs.
And we certainly will be talking about
history
that this episode.
I'm not, I don't do drugs anymore. So for the last 6 days. So I won't be talking about that. Well, yeah, sugar's
that's
a drug.
That's the old Nika. Sorry, the old Nika can't come to the phone right now. Why? Because the Zoom call isn't working.
Sorry. Yeah.
Well,
here we are again. Feels like a truly crazy time to be going into Pride weekend.
This will be coming out after Pride weekend. I know,
but just so you guys know, that's when we're recording.
Oh, now's a great time to announce we're going to have a different episode release schedule.
Yes.
You may have noticed that things have been a little wonky over here at Best Mistakes LLC. But there's just been a combination of scheduling conflicts and mental health breaks and
life comes at you fast
and technical difficulties.
Yes.
Like just a confluence of things have made it so our recording and release schedule has just been like a little bit fucked, but in the process we've realized that we are going to start recording on Fridays.
Yes.
And releasing on Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
And we're not like, we're keeping it loose because famously when the release schedule was Thursdays, they often came out on Fridays. Yeah. So that's why we're just kind of.
So Monday, Tuesday.
Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
Look out for it.
Yeah.
And now you can listen to us during your work week rather than during your weekend. And I feel like that's kind of fun. And also we'll be recording like for a while. We were always coming out of the weekend. So all of our stories were like party related, which they probably still will be because we are still party girls. But in our, listen to our Patreon episode to hear that we're in our boss bitch professional girly era.
Yeah.
And so, as professional girlies, now we're going to be telling stories from the work week.
Yeah. Speaking of being professional girlies, our live show is coming up so soon.
Our live show
June 30th.
Is June 30th at Parkside Lounge, 7 p.m. Come through.
Come through. Tickets at the door, tickets online.
Yeah, tickets at the door as well as online. And if you want a little taste of what a live show with us is like,
listen to our live show episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's out. It's been out. Go listen. Yeah. It's a hoot.
And a holler.
It's a hoot and a holler.
If I may.
That would be a great, I'm sure there is a bar called Hoot and Holler.
That's like a great dive bar name.
Have you ever met Hoot and Nanny?
No.
Okay. They're, one of our friends, that's their name is Hoot and Nanny. Which I just, I love.
I recently met somebody new, which I actually didn't even get into on the Patreon. But, you know, I'm on the rotating cast of characters of Anya's, like, half-assed love life.
Yeah.
There's a new person in the mix. And I was telling them about, like, our group of friends in a pretty casual way. I was just kind of telling a story about a group of friends. And every single one of them, like, each name got more ridiculous than the last. And they finally were like, I'm sorry. Are these, like, nicknames? Are these their names? And I was like, yes.
Yes, and.
Famously.
Yeah. Speaking of new people, because, you know, I've been telling you, I might have even said it on the podcast, that, like, there was this new kind of, like, potential fuck buddy that was back in the country that had hit me up, and I was, like, going to make him my summer boyfriend. Uh-huh. I've nixed that.
Okay.
Yeah. They failed the test.
What was the test?
It wasn't even really a test, but if it was, they failed. They hit me up last weekend after I got back from the party. And I was famously going home like that afternoon, but it was like 5 a.m. and they hit me up and I was like, sure, you can come. Like, I'm down to cuddle.
Uh-huh.
that's it. Mm-hmm. So you can come over if you'd like. And they were like, okay, great. And I was like, but just to be clear, we're cuddling, right? And he was like, yeah, for sure. And I was like, okay, because that's what I, when you come over, am going to go straight. I'm like letting you in and then I'm going to bed. But I don't mind having like a warm body that I like am familiar with mm-hmm. next to me. That's not what happened. And he tried to hook up and gave me honestly such unsatisfactory head. And then because I like didn't for like maybe 12 minutes and then because I didn't come, he stopped. And I was like, I'm going to go to bed. But I just like wish that I had told him that like the reason that I didn't come wasn't because like I take a long time to come, but because he was just bad.
Doing a bad job.
Yeah. So that's been next. I was like, and yeah, and then was like, are you sure you don't want to fuck? And I was like, oh my God, literally, are we asking that question right now? Is that what we're doing? Go read my text. No, I don't want to fuck. I'm going to bed. Go to sleep. Go to bed. And a bad cuddler.
In this political climate?
Yes. Yeah, right? bad cuddler. Yeah, I hadn't seen him since the last time that we had fucked, and that was in December when I famously was like so heartbroken. Not what I remembered.
Yeah, fucking someone through heartbroken glasses can really change the quality.
Yeah, I just felt very Whoopi Goldberg. I don't want anyone in my house. That's how I feel right now about sex. I don't want anyone in my house.
Same. I'm like casually hooking up with people in their houses a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
But not even that much.
Yeah. I just, you know what? If I need some fucking physical intimacy, I'll call one of my friends over to come cuddle me. Like,
yeah, period.
I get, you know, I'll go. I'm good. Like, I have my Lawand massage, you know, vibrator that you got. I have two of them, but I've been using the big one that you got me. I, you know, Wolf Hudson has Wolf Hudson has a great selection of videos both on their OnlyFans and on Pornhub.
Come on the pod.
Oh my God, Wolf Hudson, come in both of us, please.
Come on the pod and then in our holes,
please. So hot.
Yeah, very hot. Very
that'll be my hot take. Not that Wolf Hudson is hot, but just in relation to.
Okay, great. Well, that's a little teaser to stick around for the hot take coming down the pike.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I feel like we've covered a lot of the bases as to like where we are in the world right now. Yeah. Roe v. Wade was overturned. Also, New York City's gun control laws out the window.
Yeah.
We
should get guns.
We should concealed carry our abortions.
Yes.
Is there anything like chill and light that's going on to like add to it? Like, not really, right?
No. I mean, the Kardashians... people realize that the Kardashians, their most recent episode about Khloe finding out that whatever the fuck his name has been cheating on her was actually filmed weeks after the fact. Like they literally acted it out.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And it was like internet sleuths that went and like looked at outfits they were wearing and was like, wait a minute, but like they were wearing this outfit on this day, which doesn't like, which means that they recorded this like 6 months after the actual incident happened. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of funny. I thought that was funny.
These are the issues in America today.
Yes.
It's important.
Absolutely.
And on this podcast,
we're bringing all of it to you.
We're reporting.
We're what like Juliana Ramczyk was doing. We took over the baton for her when she stopped being on E. We're doing that now. Because she would talk about like her fertility issues and then what a celebrity had done that mm-hmm. was fucked up. And then maybe like a major world issue. Mm-hmm. We're like a yes and podcast.
Have I talked on the podcast about... maybe it was on the Patreon, but I do have to say, in light of recent events and it also being Pride weekend, I just want to talk about myself for a second, because this is, as we know, the most important activism is activism that fuels your ego. Mm-hmm. My biggest contribution to to like the intersection of Pride Weekend and Roe v. Wade being overturned is my fucking iconic story of one of my lovers got pregnant. Did I tell this story yet?
No, but you tweeted about it.
Okay. One of my lovers got pregnant a couple weeks ago from, you know, sex, famously. Not with me, but I wish. And then another one of my lovers is a Planned Parenthood nurse.
Oh, that's funny.
And I connected them, and like the Planned Parenthood nurse helped this pregnant lover of mine get her abortion. And I just love, like, and all of us are like bisexual, queer, AFAB people. Mm-hmm. And like, I just love that exact combination of like reproductive rights and bisexuality.
Totally.
Converging.
Yeah.
With just like a bunch of.
The power of three.
Yeah. A bunch of.
That's the holy
gay
trinity.
Girlies getting an abortion. Like, you know, three bisexuals and an abortion.
Yeah. That's the holy trinity. Absolutely.
And I kind of hope that they date now. That'd like, can hot. You two also become lovers?
You could facilitate that. Why not?
I don't know. I mean, I'm putting it out into the world. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they both listen to the podcast sometimes.
Okay, gorgeous.
Okay, your tits are looking so juicy, beautiful,
thank
huge.
Thank you. Sorry, they hurt, so I'm massaging them. But thank you.
Are you pregnant?
I wish. I mean, not in this climate. I don't. I take it back. They're like, you wish, you have to have it.
Now you wished.
No,
the GOP is going to make it illegal to wish that you're pregnant and then
not have a baby. Yeah. No matter, even if you're trans, yeah. they give you one. They're like, you have to have it now.
Yeah, you wished.
I'm like, fuck.
It's technically murder if you wish a pregnancy and then don't go through with it.
I didn't tweet this because, hold on, my tits were just falling out. I had to put my shirt back on.
Yeah, for context, Nika's tits have been fully out for about 4 minutes.
Just like I'm wearing a wife beater.
We both
just,
are. Yeah, I love that. Not ribbed tank top, a wife beater, yeah, and to be clear.
Sorry, I just spent a whole week in Rhode Island. And it's a crop top, so I'm just kind of, I have it rested above my tits. But
she said what she said.
I wasn't gonna tweet this, and I wouldn't, because I was like, tensions are high today. I don't want anyone to think that I'm like making light of what happened, like any of my friends who have a uterus. Not that any of my friends would think I'm making light of it, because my friends are hilarious people, but anyone. Anyway, I just, today was definitely a day where I was like, oh my God, the universe kind of put me right where I need to be in terms of what's going on with being a tranny. I just, the nights that I've spent crying over wishing I was fertile. That's why I'm ready to do the work. That's why I'm ready to get out there and organize, but woohoo.
Okay, I mean, but also to any of our trans listeners that still, or like, AFAB infertile listeners that have any kind of infertility trauma.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry.
No. Don't, Nika. You get to also have your experience of coming full circle with that. But I do want to validate that, and I also think that I do think that reproductive rights conversations can be a really tricky thing emotionally for people who want to have kids and can't. That isn't to say that it's your time to like talk about that.
No,
but
totally.
If you're feeling it, that's so valid.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, all the love in the world to you. And, you know,
I didn't tweet about it because mine was like a shitty joke. If it were a day where I was feeling where I was still in my I want to have a baby bag. And I was feeling triggered then for sure. But I more so was just kind of being like, LOL at former me.
Yeah.
You know.
Shall we segment?
Let's do it.
Mistakes, keepsakes, and hot takes.
Nika is gripping her tits with the force of a mother that is like pulling her child away from the candy rack.
The left one just hurts. And if you saw it, you would be like, yeah, it looks like it hurts. It's just engorged.
Nika's got big, juicy, fat tits right now.
Tit.
tit. Listen, that is the tit growing experience.
I know that it's normal. Thankfully, this is on the bad side of my face. So
the smaller tit is on your bad side.
Yeah,
this is a blessing.
This is the side of my nose that I don't like in pictures. Yeah, let's talk about it. Okay, I'll go first.
Great, we love a volunteer.
Okay, so my mistake of the week. I mean, my mistake of the week was, and I talked about this on the Patreon, was going home. Not that in itself, but going home and then threw myself into not like a spiral, but just a thought process. A what if? Hold on.
The sounds of Queens, New York, are coming in through the window.
I threw myself into a thought process of what if I moved back here, and I wasn't thinking like what if I moved back here permanently. I was trying to kind of keep myself more grounded. So I was like, what if I moved back here next summer? Like for the summer, and or like what if I moved back here for the end of like August to like October, and you know, it's not like a mistake completely, because I didn't and nothing happened, but it's just a mistake in the sense that that's obviously so not what I want out of life right now. And I just, you know, it's so easy to go back home, romanticize it, and then kind of like waste your time, your precious, precious time that you don't get back, thinking about these what ifs. So that was my mistake. My keepsake is that I gained weight while I was home. I've been so skinny.
Let's keep that sake.
I've been so skinny for the last like 2 months, and it's been freaking me out.
And not in a hot, cool, chic way.
No, in like I weigh 100 pounds way. Like none of my clothes fit me, and I like look like I'm literally gonna fall over at any point. Yeah, and I think like multiple things were at bay. I think that being a month and a half late for my hormone shot fucked up my weight. I also think not, you know, being depressed for close to 2 months fucked up my eating habits. Just lots of little things all came together, which was like part of why I went home. I was like, I need to, that's another keepsake, is that I went home. I've been like talking for the last few episodes about how like I want to go home and like sit on the beach and like stare at the ocean and like eat good food and like not see anyone except like one or two friends and just chill. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. So I gained weight, I chilled, I got to stare at the gorgeous ocean, had a nice checked out of my life here week. And to hear more about that, go listen to the Patreon episode. And my hot take is that it's so, like, I love men so much, and I think that it's so hot when men who want to fuck women also want to fuck men. Mm. So my hot take is that I just love bisexual men, and I truly think that bisexual men are God's favorite. They're certainly my favorite. And I just thought I wanted to have like a pride related hot take. My hot take is that bisexual men should be at the top of the totem pole, for men.
Not for women.
I mean, for men.
Roe v. Wade was just overturned.
I mean, for...
And now you want to put bisexual men above all women?
Yeah. I mean, for men. Because, you know, you have straight men, and then you have gay men.
That's not right, is it?
That's so not right. And then, you know, you have all kinds of men. Bisexual men get so much shit. They get made fun of. They get invalidated. Beat ass girl is always tweeting about how she wouldn't ever fuck a bisexual guy like once a week, and it's like, girl, they literally did not ask, nor would they. I love bisexual men.
I second that. I absolutely love a bisexual man.
It's just so hot that you also fuck men, but you also want to fuck me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's indicative of a lot of other like dismissals of toxic masculinity and patriarchal bullshit to like embrace your attraction to both men and women. That is not to say that like all gay men or all straight men are suppressing latent feelings for the gender that they say they are not attracted to.
Totally.
But I do think some of them are, because it is easier to check one of those boxes and not unpack if there's an in-between because of toxic masculinity, because liking men makes you kind of rejected from the like paradigms that liking women usually are associated with. And so like, I understand when like you might be interested in kind of everyone, but because you're like, well, I'm definitely queer, just like fully going gung-ho for being gay. It's a natural decision because of how difficult it is to be a man existing within toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
And same with being a straight person, a straight man that's like suppressing maybe your queer feelings. So when a bisexual man is loud and proud, I feel like that there's a lot of rejection of the status quo that goes into that.
Yeah.
That goes into embracing that identity.
Absolutely.
Or pansexual or whatever you want to call it. We just mean men that are attracted to multiple genders,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, there's at least three. There's at least, listen, kid. There's at least three. Don't mess with me.
That's my president.
Mr. President, how many genders are there? There's at least three. I was the first one who came out for gay marriage. That is the funniest clip in the world. I hope that's the only thing they find when aliens come here.
Yeah, at post like nuclear apocalypse.
Yeah.
Apocalypse is a nuclear
apothecary. Yeah. Post-apothecary.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's a gorgeous name for a little boy, apothecary.
Great. Well, when you
do you transition?
No. I was going to say, when you are the first trans woman to get pregnant, you can name your abortion that.
And speaking of detransitioning, J.K. Rowling, we're so happy to have you here.
We are so happy to have you on the pod. Thank you for joining
today.
Us.
Thank you for joining us.
But before you add anything, let me do my segment. Yeah. Hold that thought.
About
Joanne, it's very impolite to interrupt.
Oh,
we will let you talk
When
it's your turn. But right now it's my turn. Cool. So my keepsake, I went to Fire Island this past weekend.
You did.
It was really cute, fun, flirty. Well, not flirty. I didn't flirt with anyone, mm-hmm. but you know, just kind of in the like in the way that we call things fun and flirty.
Yeah.
I've only been to Fire Island once before, and it was literally exactly to the day, exactly a year prior.
I skipped again.
and the exact same thing happened where you opted out for a Rhode Island either friend or the state itself.
Yeah.
So I like that we're keeping tradition strong for our summer solstice. But yeah, I went to Fire Island, and like, so the last time I went to Fire Island, it was for a party with a bunch of our friends, and it's actually where I met a lot of those friends, and it was like one of the formative moments of my 2021 experience, but I still had never just been to Fire Island and like experienced just like what like a low-key, absolutely just chilling on Fire Island can be like. And it wasn't completely low key. It was Juneteenth. So there was a lot of celebration happening, and it was really fun for that reason. But I also took part in like the absolutely lounging on the beach and like treating it like a vacation rather than a destination party, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my keepsake. It was my first time really experiencing, like, I have my criticisms of Fire Island, the film. No, just kidding. I haven't watched it still. I have my criticisms of Fire Island, the place. I do think it's a shame how inaccessible it is and how expensive it is. And I think that is indicative of a larger problem in the queer world where we gentrify our own spaces.
Yeah.
P-Town, it's happened. Fire Island, it's happened. It's happening in Zipolite.
Yeah.
It happens in every gay neighborhood, like West Hollywood or Chelsea, or like, you know, it's like a tale as old. Did you see the mouse?
I did. It was right at the hamper.
We are Cinderella today. We do have a little mouse scurrying about our feet, hasn't tried to dress us yet.
No, it hasn't.
And I do have, we have a party to go to later. So
maybe that's why it's in the room. It sees all of Elisa's clothes.
It sees the clothes and it sees two girlies that need to go to a ball
later. It's like,
later.
What are you, she's like, why are you talking?
Yeah, the mouse is like, gosh, like please let me
dress you.
Put you in little outfits. That is the relation. That is the sacred relationship between mice and girlies.
And girlies.
It's a shame how expensive and inaccessible it is. I was fortunate enough to just have a place to stay for free while I was there. But that is just because I am so hot and cool and likable, and not everyone has those privileges.
Totally.
It's almost as valuable of a privilege as it would be to be able to afford a place to stay on Fire Island. But all that being said, it's still really fucking cool, even in its flaws, that a place like that exists at all. That it is just like truly kind of an autonomous space for queer people to like be gay. And it has been there for like a significant chunk of time when being queer wasn't always as embraced culturally as it currently is. So like, it was just nice to spend time in the energy of like what queer people continually build for each other and ourselves. And what's also cool is that there is currently the person literally that I was staying with in Fire Island is someone who is among the people leading the cause to make Fire Island more accessible. Mm-hmm. And there's like a lot of work being put in like this year more than ever. And hopefully that ball is just going to keep rolling on making it accessible regardless of income to be able to like participate in what feels like kind of just like a gay summer camp.
Yeah.
And I know there are bigger problems in the world right now than if people can afford to go to Fire Island or not.
Like
but,
what? You but, give me a list.
I will, literally later
Fake
in the
news.
Episode. But it's like we were talking about before, like, well, actually, we were talking about that maybe on the Patreon episode. But like finding joy where we can is a huge part of resistance. Mm-hmm. And I think spaces like Fire Island, spaces like P-Town, and like the point of them are helpful for that purpose. And it's a shame that they're only that they've turned slowly into spaces only for rich people. But it's also really exciting to see how much work is being put into like making that not the case.
Yeah.
My mistake this week. Well, it wasn't a mistake of this week, but it's a mistake I realized that I made this week. But it's a mistake that I've been making for months now. I've been going on road trip after road trip with my besties, just paying for tolls on my Easy Pass account and not going through and like splitting those tolls among everyone who was on the road trip. And like if it were just a couple of road trips, I wouldn't even like go through and ask people to pay me back because like what's $15 here and there. But it was literally like six road trips with like four people on each road trip, and all of them amounted to each person owing me like between $15 and $40. And I was like, oh, I know that we went out, like literally charging people for the Atlanta Pride road trip was so funny. I'm like, I know this was literally 8-9 months ago now, so this is crazy to be Venmo requesting you for $15 for this, but on a longer, like if you saw all of the tolls, I'm like $400 deep into covering everybody's like share of those parts of the road trips. So that was just kind of a funny mistake because sometimes I'll be like, damn, where's all my money going?
Yeah.
And I got an answer this week. If you have anything like that, I encourage you to kind of just go for your records, gaze upon your automatic payments, see if there's anything that's getting lost in the sauce. You too may be entitled to compensation. My hot take. Okay, this is pretty hot of a take. People aren't gonna like it. Not JP levels of hot take, but it's up there. Okay. Beyonce released her first single for her upcoming album this past week. It's fine. I like it. I'm looking forward to the other songs on the album. I have a feeling that this song is going to become the single ladies of this album, and it's going to be way overplayed and we're all going to hate it in 2 weeks. Yeah. But that is not my hot take. My hot take is that people, because she says like quit your job or whatever in the song, people have been trying to give it this like this narrative that it's like a workers' fucking labor movement anthem, which I don't think that was her intention, but it, even if it was her intention, it is certainly not that.
No.
And that's not just because I don't think that Beyonce is a labor rights activist. Like, this is not a hot take coming for Beyonce specifically. It's just more of a reminder to all of us stands out there, that your fave is still a rich person, your fave pop star, your fave actor, I don't know, your fave like influencer. They're still a rich person. And while there are some rich people with generally good politics, they still are, if you are like, if you're somebody who cares about labor movements and you're someone who cares about abolition, liberation, equity for all, any of these things, part of the vision for that is overthrowing all rich people. So the rich people themselves cannot be anyone that we put on a pedestal for these movements.
Yeah.
And I'm fine if Beyonce is ever singing in support of the movement. But I'm also, or like any other fucking celebrity, if they want to voice their support in any way, great. Thank you so much. But also, you do need to release certain comforts and privileges you have to actually be our ally in this. And pretty much none of our favorite celebrities are actually doing that.
No.
So to like put them on any kind of pedestal or like try to excuse them from any kind of criticism for being the rich people that they are because you like their music is just very silly to me. And yeah, no rich person is immune, especially not the rich people who like literally have songs bragging about how rich they are.
Agreed.
And I'm not just talking about Beyonce. I'm talking about Cardi B. I'm talking about Ariana Grande. I'm talking about...
Leave Ariana Grande alone. Thank you very much.
I'm talking about anybody who has any song that's like bragging about their success and their money. Like, they, it's fully their right to do that. Whatever. Sing about whatever you want. But like, to then at all act like anything they do is in support of the everyday person... is just silly to me. That's my hot take. I still love Beyonce. I'm not coming for her. I just think it's very, very weird to put any pop star that is literally a millionaire and or in combination with their husband, a billionaire, on any kind of like socialist movement pedestal. Weirdo behavior, especially when they like... are active capitalists. Beyonce has never purported to be anything but a capitalist. She's constantly coming out with new products for us to consume. If we stopped being consumers, she would be mad about that, y'all. So she's not trying to lead us into the fight.
I agree.
That's my hot take.
Gorge.
But release your trade for sure.
For sure.
Fuck up of the week. We've talked a lot about Roe v. Wade and we're going to talk about it more in the mistake that I'm covering. So let's just put a pin in Roe v. Wade talk about the other Supreme Court ruling this week.
Oh, yeah. The gun one.
The concealed carry ruling. I could see the argument for that being the fuck up of the week.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, concealed carry, which has been it's been, concealed carry has been illegal in New York for a century now. The Supreme Court just ruled was unconstitutional. And so now anyone in New York can carry around, you know, anyone who has a registered firearm permit, whatever the fuck, they can have their gun on them now. So that's exciting.
That's a mistake for multiple reasons. First of all, oh my God, the tragedies that are in store for us. But second of all, you just made the most blue, possibly the most leftist city in America, completely able to arm themselves. And the revolution is coming. So it's also just a mistake for them, really. Like, if the Supreme Court is worried about, you know, their safety, what a weird, weird time to encourage progressive people to arm themselves. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, it's cuckoo.
Because I do see a lot of people saying that, that they're like, well, if that's the world we're in, then I'm going to get a gun. Yeah. And I don't blame them. It is kind of, it's tricky territory because that's literally what the NRA wants to happen. Like, that's why they have so systematically set up the dominoes for this exact knockdown, is so that people on both sides of the equation arm themselves out of fear. And even if it is what the NRA wants, it is also kind of, we do have to like think about our own like safety. So I don't blame leftists for like now sort of getting on the gun train.
Not at all.
Especially being someone from Vermont, I have like a lot of progressive people in my life that are gun owners, and like it doesn't retract at all from like the very progressive leftist opinions they hold. If anything, their gun ownership is like in the name of those things.
Yeah.
It's just a weird moment in history.
Agreed.
Gun wise, and also everything else wise.
Everything else wise. I agree.
But, you know, listener, write into the pod. Are you going to get a gun? Should we release Best Mistakes merch in AR-15 form?
Let's do it. Tiny little bedazzled guns.
Like little Thelma and Louise guns.
Yeah.
That could be cute.
That could be cute.
We could just like absolutely merchandise the fuck out of this.
I'm thinking. Okay.
What?
Let's do it. Let's have a business meeting. We're going to circle back to that.
We're going to... And so now we're going to turn over to J.K. Rowling. What do you think about the gun situation?
Oh, she left.
Ah, fuck. The connection was lost. We'll get her back on. Sooner rather than later, Joanne is going to say her piece on the issue that everyone wants to hear from her about. Gun rights in America.
Yes.
I mean, Joanne is honestly pro-gun, if you think about it. What do all the wizards have on them at all times?
Guns, little magic guns.
Little magic guns.
Little magic guns.
Little magic guns everywhere.
Listener mistakes.
Okay, this one comes from somebody who came to our live show, because we also had live show audience members write their mistakes in real time at the live show. And this is a shameless plug and reminder to come to our live show Thursday,
June 30th
at Parkside Lounge, 7 p.m.
Okay.
I fucked my friend / roommate the week before lockdown started, and we decided to just go back to normal and not make this a regular thing. Then we were all stuck at home and so decided to start fucking again. The cops are coming because you're not supposed to fuck your roommates. They are very upset.
They're really mad.
By summer, that had imploded, and then we had to live with each other as we slowly started to hate each other. Moral of the story is the nanny / Mr. Sheffield fantasy is not worth it.
No.
Period.
That's so true.
There's something that happens to me when I live with someone, and maybe, you know, I just haven't lived with the right special someone yet, but when I live with someone under roommate terms, I still have never lived with someone romantically or sexually, but when I have a roommate, it doesn't matter how attractive I found them before, there's like it immediately I desexualize them in my head. Mm-hmm. And so whenever people have fucking their roommate stories, I am both relieved that my brain doesn't let me see my roommates in that fashion, but also a little bit jealous because it sounds like, I don't know, a rite of passage to like make the mistake of fucking your roommate.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I've never lived with anyone I wanted to fuck, but...
I mean, you famously live with just your biological sister now, so it would be...
Well, I'm saying in the past.
I know.
I've never lived with anyone hot. Well...
Except for Elisa, your biological
sister. Kevin, if you're listening,
sister.
You're hot, but I didn't want to fuck you, and you don't want to fuck me when we live together. Yeah. Anyway. fun roommate, though. Okay, so my deep dive. My derp dive. I'm running out of deep dives.
I mean, now is maybe a time to pose to the listener. We are thinking about removing the deep dive segment. to maybe bring it back just like every, I don't know, so many episodes so that like that is still part of that vulnerability is still part of the podcast. But we like, you know, we're very, very young, as you know. We are still so young and supple that we haven't made enough mistakes to... Honestly, we're on, what, episode 79?
Yeah.
So for each of us, that's like 35 plus, almost 40 mistakes each that we've divulged on this podcast.
Yeah.
And y'all tell us that you have a hard time thinking of a mistake to write to us.
Imagine how we're feeling. I mean, my God.
As big of fuck ups as we are, we simply, the well is running dry.
Yeah, it's not that deep.
So we were thinking of maybe introducing a segment on the podcast that is to accompany fuck up of the week. It's kind of like the way that we have keepsakes for our segment, our mistakes, keepsakes, hot take segment. We could have like a inverse of fuck up of the week. So essentially the keepsake of the week, but on a larger cultural scale, not like in our personal lives.
Yes.
We would think of a cuter name for it for sure. And then it would also, in these trying times, give us an opportunity to highlight good things that are happening. Because not in a toxic positivity kind of way, but in a, our brains are rotting from doom scrolling kind of way.
For sure.
It would just be nice to maybe talk about good things that are going on in the world. So tell us what you think about that idea.
Let us know.
We're definitely not going to get rid of deep dive on a permanent scale. Just, it wouldn't be every single episode because we are inevitably going to have more deep dives to share. So it would be very silly to just get rid of it altogether.
Yeah, but we're going to start that trial this week.
Do you not want to do it right now?
No, I will. I really can't think of one right now.
Should we do a like keepsake of the week then?
This
week is a particularly hard one.
It is a
but we could try.
keepsake of Britney Spears bought a new house.
I just don't need to like highlight Britney Spears is actually Britney Spears gets to be the one pop star that could lead a labor rights movement because she was literally like what's the word, exploited. But she also takes private jets everywhere, so that kind of cancels things out for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. what is the keepsake of the week? The keepsake of the week.
What would we call that segment?
Highlight of the week.
Highlight of the week.
Highlight of the week.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So the highlight of the week. Well, I mean, this isn't like American, but who cares? Jamaica is now in the works of removing Queen Elizabeth as their head of state. Following like they're like directly following Barbados, who just did it late last year. And now Australia is talking about doing the same thing, which is cool. That's like, you know, kind of the death rattle of an imperial power coming to an end, which is, you know, maybe that's like a small but good sign of what's to come for the rest of the world that wants to get rid of the imperial power structures that be.
That rules.
I thought that was cool. I read that.
Great. So.
Gorge.
That was our first episode without a deep dive. Tell us what you thought. Let's dive in to this week's best mistake. It's a bad one.
Best mistake.
So I am going to take us on the journey of how and why exactly Roe v. Wade was never codified into law. So, as we've brought up multiple times this episode, Roe v. Wade was overturned, and because it was not codified into federal law, that has brought up, it has created the opportunity for individual states to pretty much immediately take away all abortion rights. And, you know, I'm no politician, I'm no lawmaker, but it seems like it was a little bit preventable in the 50 years it was a constitutional right. sorry, 49. So let's get into it. Why did the Democrats, our champions of change? So 49 years have passed since the Supreme Court's 1973 decision in Roe v. Wade established the constitutional right to an abortion before fetal viability. There have been congressional efforts to codify the decision, as well as to pass a constitutional amendment overturning Roe v. Wade, and all have failed until today. Spoiler alert, it wasn't the codifying that didn't fail. Along the way, abortion has transformed national politics and created a gulf between voters and party leaders, to the extent that by 2019, as many as 3 in 10 Democrats and Republicans did not agree with their party on abortion, which is according to the Pew Research Center. In September of 2021, the U.S. Supreme Court left Texas's restrictive 6-week abortion ban in place. 3 weeks later, the House passed by a 218-211 vote the Women's Health Protection Act, which would prohibit states from passing most abortion restrictions prior to fetal viability. The bill failed to pass in May of 2022, as expected, after it did not reach the Senate's 60-vote threshold. All Democrats voted for the legislation except Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, the absolute thorn in our sides. But to be honest, all the Democrats are, and we'll get into that. And all the Republicans opposed the bill. The Senate vote was largely supposed to be a symbolic move by Democrats to show support for abortion rights after the leaked draft in May, or was it April? April or May this year, showed the Supreme Court may overturn Roe v. Wade. So to refresh everyone's memory, a few weeks ago, a little over a month ago, there was a leaked document that alerted everyone to what ended up happening today, that the Supreme Court was thinking about overturning Roe v. Wade. And that is literally like days later, the Senate held this vote. And apparently the reason for that, like Senator Schumer openly admitted that the reason for that, despite knowing that it would not pass, was to just show our constituents that we do really want it to pass, but we just can't because we're just little babies. Little babies before viability. Because that's what constituents need, is symbolism. Mm-hmm. Personally, I love voting for some good old symbolic gestures. So how the two parties arrived at this pivotal moment for abortion access involves the emergence of a new wedge issue, a realignment of the political parties, and decisions they made along the way about when and how to push for abortion regulations and to what extent. And all of that happened within the last 50 years. A June 2021 survey of U.S. attitudes about abortion rights and Roe v. Wade from public opinion polling firm Gallup showed that 58% of Americans opposed overturning the 1973 ruling and 32% favored it, mirroring public opinion of 1989. So the actual like people of America haven't really changed their attitudes towards abortion. It has been largely like a political move. The only thing that's changed in politics, or the only thing that's changed, is the politics of the Republican Party and, frankly, the Democratic Party, says Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood from 2006 to 2018. So in 1975, when abortion was newly established as a constitutional right, 19% of Democrats told Gallup that abortion should be legal in all or most cases. 51% said it should be legal in certain cases, and 26% said it should be illegal in all cases. Among Republicans, 18% said abortion should be legal in all or most cases. 55% said it should be legal in some cases, and 25% said it should be illegal in all. The same poll taken in 2021 showed more Democratic voters supporting abortion in all or most cases and more Republicans supporting it in none, but with sizable majorities in both parties, 91% of Democrats and 69% of Republicans continuing to support abortion access in at least some cases. So 69% of Republicans actually are not fully opposed to abortion, which if you like just watch American news, that would not be obvious.
Yeah.
So the parties in Congress are less nuanced. In the House, Texas Rep. Henry Kuehler, is that how you say his name?
I don't know. I think so.
Is considered the only reliably anti-abortion Democrat. And as of 2019, there are no Republicans who support abortion rights. In the Senate, Democrats Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Bob Casey of Pennsylvania both self-identify as pro-life, though they have at times supported forms of abortion access. And Republican Senators Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine have both embraced some abortion rights. But that is like, as far as how big both the House and Senate are, the fact that I could name all of the representatives that are a little bit outside of the opinion on abortion that the rest of their party is a stark contrast to their constituents. So political scientists Scott Ainsworth and Thad Hall wrote in the 2010 book Abortion Politics in Congress, when it comes to abortion, the increasingly partisan nature of abortion politics represents a case of issue evolution driven by party elites and filtering down to the masses. Elisa von Hagel is a political science professor and coordinator of the gender studies program at the University of Wisconsin Superior, who tracks the emergence of abortion policy. And she says one key to understanding abortion politics today is knowing that just several decades ago, it was not considered a political issue at all, and that it was a very, very purposeful realignment that happened. In the 1970s, political affiliation had nothing to do with if voters or elected officials supported abortion rights. In 1972, the term pro-life was not even in the political lexicon yet, and that was the same year Republican Richard Nixon adopted anti-abortion positions during his presidential reelection campaign in a successful bid to win over Catholic voters who had traditionally backed Democratic presidents, including the two before Nixon. And so that is 1 year before the Supreme Court's ruling of Roe v. Wade. And it's like, if you really like look at it under a microscope, it's like, very obvious that this divide in like Democrat versus Republican views on abortion literally only came from Nixon trying to win the Catholic vote. And like before that, Republicans didn't really have any affiliation with a position on abortion. And it's only it's been an opinion that has sort of just been made for them and mm-hmm. like fed to them. And even to this day, obviously, if you like look at the statistics, most Republicans don't even fully oppose abortion. It's like almost as if their abortion opinion is one that has just been like made up for them, and they like just co-sign it by default because of like all like just identifying as a Republican means you're pro-life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court's 1973 ruling of Roe v. Wade energized the anti-abortion coalition of evangelical as well as Catholic voters that began to emerge during Nixon's presidency and still exists in politics today. Privately, Nixon told top aides that he believed abortions should be available in certain circumstances when he gets his mistress pregnant, such as for pregnancies from incest or interracial relationships. Yep.
Oh my God.
Shout out to Nixon.
Oh my God.
What?
I said Armageddon.
After Joe Biden, you might recognize the name, joined the Senate in 1973, he voted for a failed constitutional amendment that would have allowed states to overturn the court's ruling of Roe v. Wade. In a Washingtonian magazine interview at the time, he said of Roe, "I think it went too far. I don't think that a woman has the sole right to say what should happen to her body."
Joe Biden should be put down.
Joe Biden said those words, everyone. Okay, back to the timeline. So Mary Ziegler, a law professor at Florida State University who studies abortion, believes that the Senate probably had a bipartisan majority that supported abortion rights when Roe was decided, but advocates did not feel a pressing need to pass legislation. She says it seemed to be kind of like overkill because at the time, the abortion rights movement trusted the courts to protect abortion rights for some time. During the 1976 presidential campaign, both Republican Gerald Ford and Democrat Jimmy Carter opposed abortion in some cases. That year, Congress for the first time approved the Hyde Amendment, which bars using federal dollars for most abortions, including the government's Medicaid health insurance program. More Democrats than Republicans voted for that. There were some Democrats and progressives who voted for the Hyde Amendment in part because they thought the Supreme Court would invalidate it. It was part of an appropriations bill. So if you liked other stuff in the appropriations bill, that was fine because the Supreme Court would take care of it, Ziegler said. It didn't. The court upheld the constitutionality of the Hyde Amendment in 1980. It was around this time that abortion started to become linked to ideology and party in ways that had not occurred before, according to Ainsworth and Hall. Republican Ronald Reagan, who had relaxed abortion restrictions as California's governor, called for the appointment of anti-abortion judges during his 1980 presidential campaign. By the late 1980s, he had nominated more federal judges than any president before or since. When Democrat Bill Clinton campaigned for the presidency in 1992, he did so with the message that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, which kind of begins this rhetoric of like support for abortion with concession on the Democratic Party's part. Mm-hmm. So for a long time, and like this is becoming less and less the case in recent years, but for a long time, it was very popular for pro-choice people to say things like, well, nobody wants to have an abortion, or like, of course, yeah, Nobody's pro-abortion. Like they would just kind of make these statements that actually validated what anti-choice people believed to be true, which is that abortion is a bad thing and is immoral. But to the pro-choice voter and to the pro-choice politician, the autonomy and the like quote-unquote woman's right to choose was ultimately what was more important to them, even if they too kind of believed that abortion isn't okay, which I think has been a big fuel to getting us to where we are today, because having that concession in our stance as a group of people who believe in abortion rights makes it very hard to prioritize abortion rights, because when you believe that something is important but is maybe a little bit wrong, of course, that's not going to be as important to you as things that like are just important.
Totally.
So I will personally blame Bill Clinton for that, but mostly because I hate the Clintons, but also because he did kind of invent this stance. Once president, Clinton marked the 20th anniversary of the Roe decision by reversing abortion restrictions put in place by the Reagan and George H.W. Bush administrations. Bill Clinton began his presidency with Democrats in control of both the House and Senate, and with a majority that backed abortion rights. But disagreements in his own party remained over how to handle the Hyde Amendment and other specifics. A classic tale as old as time, when Democrats have control over the administration and the House and the Senate, they love to infight until they don't have control over it anymore and completely waste any opportunity to do anything real with that power. So in 1992, the Supreme Court had affirmed the right to an abortion in the case Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which challenged restrictive Pennsylvania laws. But the ruling also said states had some leeway to add some limits to abortion during the first trimester of pregnancy. So Democrats revived the Freedom of Choice Act, which was that era's attempt to codify Roe, which failed in 1993. Democratic leaders then turned their focus to healthcare legislation because it was something that they could agree on. Once again, like I was saying, it is so much easier to deprioritize something that you think there is any kind of moral question or like sticky ethical dilemmas. Mm-hmm. So that is what happened when we had that opportunity to codify abortion rights into law. In 1994, the Republican Party ran on its newly released Contract with America, though by that time, the party's candidates and lawmakers were increasingly aligning with the anti-abortion movement. The contract focused on 60% issues that had broad support from the electorate, like slashing welfare programs and a balanced budget amendment. And overturning Roe was not one of them. But in early 1995, the Christian Coalition, a group founded in 1987 by religious conservative and former presidential candidate Pat Robertson, that became emblematic of the Christian right, released its own Contract with the American Family at a news conference alongside then House Speaker Newt Gingrich. The contract called for restrictions on late-term abortions. Then Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, who was considering a Republican presidential bid based on curbing religious influence on the party, told ABC's Good Morning America that he would not support it because it opposes a woman's right to choose. So we're still seeing flickers of it being not really officially a Republican or Democrat issue. And like, We saw the Democrats not codify it into law because they couldn't really agree on if it was like morally okay or not. And we're seeing a Republican openly condemn undermining a quote unquote woman's right to choose. So it's like, and this is still not that long ago, that this is still not a given of these like party opinions. Following this, a period of Republicans attaching abortion-related riders to appropriation bills and repeatedly introducing what would become known as the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act, which banned abortions by dilation and extraction in the second trimester of pregnancy. The Republican-controlled Congress passed the act twice, only to be vetoed by Clinton. Then eventually signed into law by Republican President George W. Bush in 2003. So this is where we start to like officially see it as a Republican agenda to limit abortion rights. It was during debate over the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act that public opinion about an absolute right to legal abortion began to shift. Even the name of the law, which adopted a term not used in medicine to describe late-term abortions, was seen as a victory for abortion opponents. Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act. Say that 10 times fast. In the House, the final version of the legislation was backed by 218 Republicans and 63 Democrats. In the Senate, 47 Republicans and 17 Democrats. Its constitutionality was upheld by the Supreme Court in 2007. Richards said that when she got to Planned Parenthood in 2006, the Democratic Party was still recruiting congressional candidates who did not support abortion rights. So as late as 2006, it was pretty normal for Democrats to not automatically support abortion. Early in Barack Obama's Democratic presidential bid, he said, "The first thing I'd do as president would be to codify Roe by signing the latest iteration of the Freedom of Choice Act." But 4 months into his presidency, Obama said it was not my highest legislative priority and suggested energy would be better spent reducing unintended pregnancies, which is a pattern at this point with Democrats. Once again, deprioritizing and like kind of kicking the can down the road with this assurance that it'll continue to be protected by the Supreme Court. So why do we have to get around to it right now? And, you know, like, even if it does become an issue, stop being a whore. As Obama's vice president, Biden said, the government had no right to tell other people that women, they can't control their own body. That's the direct quote. Just to be clear, that's how he decided to say that. Okay. So Democratic differences on abortion threatened to derail Obamacare. Republicans were united in opposition, so Democrats could not afford to lose a single senator vote. To win the support of Ben Nelson, an anti-abortion Democrat from Nebraska, party leaders included a version of an amendment that prohibits Affordable Care Act plans from covering abortion. Obama also issued an executive order reiterating that federal money would not be used to pay for abortions. And once again, I just view this as Democrats giving concessions to that, yeah, like, yeah, abortion is kind of wrong still. We agree with you. And it's just like, say it with your whole chest if you're going to say it, you know? Yeah. Stop dangling the carrot of abortion rights over your voters' heads to guilt them into voting for you, only to then validate your opponents on their opinion on abortion. Yeah. It's very weirdo behavior. In the 2010 midterm elections, Republicans picked up more than 60 House seats to retake control of that chamber and added 7 in the Senate as part of the Tea Party wave. Republican efforts picked up to defund Planned Parenthood by denying the organization state and federal money throughout the rest of Obama's presidency. And we have Mike Pence to thank for that one. In January 2016, Planned Parenthood, under Richard's leadership, endorsed Democrat Hillary Clinton for her presidential run. It was the first time the organization had made an endorsement in a presidential primary. And when Hillary Clinton accepted the endorsement, the Hyde Amendment repeal ended up in the Democratic Party's official policy platform. Clinton lost to a Republican named Donald Trump. Not sure if y'all have heard of him, but pretty bad guy. And he said at the time that he was running to be a pro-life president and had taken a number of anti-abortion stances during his campaign. He was the first sitting president to attend the annual March for Life rally and appointed 3 Supreme Court justices, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett, who cemented the court's conservative anti-abortion majority. To run for president as a Democrat in 2020 meant unequivocally supporting abortion rights. The Democratic candidates all supported some version of Roe codification and the repeal of the Hyde Amendment, citing the Trump administration's attempts to curb abortion access and restrictive laws recently enacted in Georgia and Alabama. When Joe Biden was elected as president in 2020, he went on to drop the Hyde Amendment in his first budget proposal. Early in his presidency, he also rescinded the Mexico City policy known as the Global Gag Rule, which requires foreign organizations to certify they will not promote abortion as a condition for receiving U.S. aid for reproductive health care. In October, his administration reversed a Trump-era regulation that barred healthcare providers receiving Title X family planning funds from mentioning abortion care to patients as an option. Biden has emphasized codifying Roe as a proxy for his larger abortion messaging and has said he would sign the Women's Health Protection Act if it were to make it to his desk, which is a very passive stance, IMO. Like, yeah. If it matters to you, then do it. What do you mean if it makes it to your desk? Democrats, since 2020, have lacked a legislative path to codify abortion rights. Instead, they turned to making the case that voters should reinforce their congressional majorities in the 2022 midterms, believing the party's support for abortion access will benefit their candidates up and down the ballot. So basically just affirming that the reason they don't codify abortion rights is so that they can continue to have that as a reason for us to vote for them.
It's such an abusive relationship.
It's like actually abusive. The failure to pass the Women's Health Protection Act last month shows us how that plan went. And today, on June 24th, 2022, Roe v. Wade was overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court, thanks to all of that effort put in by the Democratic Party to make sure that we keep voting for them, because that's all that fucking mattered to either party in all of this.
Yeah, I mean, the moral of the story is that, I mean, one, that the Democrats are useless, mm-hmm. But I think just, like, two is to, like, maybe this isn't a moral, but just something to look at. It certainly changed my understanding and my view of this country, you motherfucker, mm-hmm. view of this country, has been the fact that it's just one huge interest group after another that kind of controls everything in this country. Mm-hmm. And that's what has allowed like evangelicals to organize the way that they have in the last however many years, is that it's just like dark money being funneled in to line these people's pockets. And if you look at it that way, I think it's kind of a lot easier to address, because it's not really an ideological issue for these people.
And it's not really an ideological issue for most voters either.
Yeah.
The vast majority of Americans are pretty much universally in agreement that in at least some cases, abortion should be accessible.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like a made up divide in ideology.
Absolutely.
Between like people themselves. And it is absolutely not the will of the people to overturn Roe v. Wade. Like, the majority of people polled in recent years did not want to overturn it. And I don't know, it goes to show that the system as it exists right now is actually not a democracy at all. Like, it really doesn't matter what the majority of people think or want or believe. It always comes down to like who can most successfully lobby and like abuse the system for their own interests.
Yep.
And their interests very rarely have anything the fuck to do with the actual issue at hand.
Yeah.
It's usually money related.
Yeah, always.
If not money related, it's related to the control and marginalization of groups that threaten the white supremacist patriarchy.
Say that five times fast.
And ultimately, threatening the white supremacist patriarchy is threatening their pockets. Absolutely. So it still comes back to money.
Moral of the story.
Moral of the story is we should all stop paying our taxes.
General strike.
General strike. Tax resistance works. The suffragettes did it, and they were all like white feminist racists. So like,
we can do it too.
We can do it too, and like not be shitty. But they did do it successfully. So I guess that's why I bring them up. Yeah. I don't identify with the suffragettes, to be clear. Pretty sick that I have the right to vote, though, because it clearly does a ton. Thanks for that.
Yeah, I have to go vote. We have to go because we have to go vote. I'm voting early. I care so much. I'm voting early.
Thank you to the suffragettes for my right to vote for Joe Biden, who has done so much for me. Blue no matter who.
Blue no matter who. On that note.
On that note, please, like, do whatever little things you can do. This is a really, really fucked up situation we're all in. And all we have is each other. And I encourage everyone to do like a quick viewing of Dirty Dancing with your beloveds to just, you know, brush up on your abortion empathy. Brush up on your abortion history and watch Dirty Dancing. And then get out there and rock the vote.
And then
Pokemon Go to the polls. And then, I mean, actually, like, if you have the money, send it to some
abortion
like,
funds,
grassroots mutual aid abortion funds. I would, you know, listen, it's not a bad thing necessarily to donate to Planned Parenthood, but the issue with donating to Planned Parenthood is that a lot of their donations go to political lobbying, and they politically lobby for people like Joe Biden, who then lets us down when push comes to shove in situations like this. And your money is probably not actually going to helping people who need abortion care get that procedure.
Yeah.
So if you want your money to actually help an individual receive an abortion, send the money to abortion funds and to like mutual aid organizations. And if you can, if you know someone, like literally send the money to the person themselves who needs the abortion, you know? That's real mutual aid. And then test your drugs.
And then test your holes. And then kiss your friends on the mouth.
And send us your mistakes.
Bye.
At bestmistakespod@gmail.com.
And
come to our live show
on June 30th at Parkside Lounge.
Love you.
Love you.